It's been spring break for me this week, so I've had a honey-do list. And those honey-do lists are pretty strange because they just never go away. You go and you cross one off and you know there's three more things that are on it, and it just keeps growing. So my honey-do list has been extended probably till Nikki's graduation, I would assume. I spent most of the week tiling around bathtubs and showers and putting on laminate flooring, wood laminate flooring on the floors. And so that probably tells you that what I've mostly been doing is measuring. So I'm thinking a lot this morning about measurement and measuring. I spent an hour and 15 minutes on one piece of laminate flooring board the other day. I timed myself. I thought, I wonder how long it's going to take me to actually measure this out and cut all the little perfect things in so that it'll fit perfectly in there. And there's a saying that you're supposed to measure twice and cut once, right? And I think that's those are for really good carpenters. I think I generally measure like about five times, and then I cut a little bigger than you're supposed to, and then I measure again and trim it a little, and then measure again and trim it a little more until we can get a perfect piece to fit in there. I actually even took pictures of that board when I was done with it. I'll probably put them on Facebook later so I can prove that I actually cut that board out. And Ginger got home, I said, look at that board. Look at that board. And it was perfect fit. And then over here I had another board that wasn't as good. In both of my classes, I start the year out talking about measurement. I have a whole unit on measurement because how important it is for scientific experiments and recording data. And one of the things that I'm always pointing out that I think is always sometimes just kind of, you know, even people in the world kind of feel like that measuring units are like were handed down with the Ten Commandments, like they're given by God, that we have measurement units that have always been here. And it's always interesting for students to realize that measuring units are completely arbitrary. Someone somewhere a long time ago decided how we're going to measure things in certain types of units. They just kind of came up with something, and then if most people kind of agreed with that person or that person had some clout, then maybe that unit would stick and we could use that particular unit. And so that can cause some problems. If we're going to go because he's the king and this is the size of his foot and we're going to go with that as our measurement unit and we're going to call it a foot and we all use that, well, that sounds good until you have an 8-year-old king and now your blueprint for your palace makes a tiny little palace if you're going to use that measurement for whatever the measurement of the foot of the king is. So what we need is, we found as civilization has grown, is that we need standards. We need a certain standard that we can compare things to that is always going to be the same. And of course, we also realized a little too late that our numbering system is based on tens. So we decided to try to make things a little bit easier, and we went to this system called the metric system, which most of you probably don't like. I love it. I think it's really easy for math-wise, and we use it in science, and really we use it in any place that we want to compete. If you want to run track, you got to run things in the metric system now, otherwise the other countries won't play with us. So we have to do things in this system based on 10. And if we're going to talk about length, we have what our base unit is called a meter. And even that is, we've redefined throughout the years. We have trying to make it a more perfect standard. It originally was 1/10 millionth of the way from the equator to the North Pole. 10 million meters from the North Pole around to the equator, which means 40 million meters all the way around the Earth. And if you measure that, you come out just a little over 40 million meters all the way around the Earth. And they designated people to go out and actually do a voyage and to measure these things, trying to pinpoint how long the meter is going to be. That got changed. We talked about a meter as the length of what we call a seconds pendulum. And you know what a pendulum is? It's something that just swings back and forth. And a seconds pendulum is something that if you let it go, it'll swing over here and then back in 2 seconds. So it takes 1 second to go there and 1 second to come back. And with Earth's gravity, that happens to be 1 meter long. You take a 1 meter long pendulum, it, It'll take 1 second to swing over and 1 second to swing back. And the problem with that is that got thrown away too, is because gravity's not exactly the same at different points on the Earth. You get a little further away from the Earth, you have a little less gravity. A little closer to the center, you have a little bit more gravity. So that's not always going to be perfect also. We then changed it to, and I had to write this number down, 1,650,764 wavelengths of the orange-red emission line when we put electricity through krypton gas. This gives emission lines, it gives gas certain lights. And if we have this many wavelengths of light, that's how long a meter would be. I'm sure that's probably boring to you. It's very exciting to me. And then we've, not too long ago, got to our definition, which we still hold today, which is how far light will travel in 1/300,000,000th of a second. Now that's not very much time, right? But light will travel about 1 meter. And so what we've done is we've tied it to the speed of light so we never have to change the definition again. Because Einstein said the speed of light is always this speed in a vacuum, and it's never greater than that. Of course, if you are in anywhere scientific-minded, you've watched the news, and lately Einstein might have been wrong. Oh no, everything's going to be a disaster. We think neutrinos might actually go faster than the speed of light. So that means the length of a meter could change again. And this is the problem with measurement on this Earth. That's the whole point, is that it's not perfect. It's not a complete, perfect standard that you can compare everything to. We have made standards. We actually, over in France, you can go and visit the standard meter and the standard kilogram. The standard meter is made of 90% platinum and 10% iridium at 0 degrees Celsius. That's with the temperature they keep it, because at different temperatures it could expand or contract, right? So we have a standard meter that everything is based off of, and those get sent out, and so we all know how long a standard meter is, and that standard is kept by the French. I don't know if we can trust them or not, but it's over there, and you can go and visit that standard meter and see what it looks like. And it's important to have a standard. We can't just all go after whatever type of measuring device we want, because it's going to be hard to communicate and talk to each other what we're going to do. I could say, I'm going to decide the pitch pipe is my measuring device. I want to see how tall this podium is. I'm going to measure it in 35 and a half, 35 and an A pitch pipes. I could do any standard I want. It's arbitrary. And so it's important to have a standard. We still have a problem, even though we have decided to have standards that we're going to compare things to. We still have a problem when it comes to precision. How precise are you going to be? I have a scale at my school that when you put something on there, it'll say 13 grams. I have another scale that is identical in every way. I mean, you couldn't even tell them apart if you were just looking far away. I could put something on there and it'll say 13.1 grams. I have another scale, completely identical, and the reason I have these scales is to make this point. I could put something on there and it'd be 13.17 grams. It's just more precision. And how far could I go? I could go forever on that, on how precise I can measure something. So any measurement you ever make on this Earth isn't the true value. It's not correct. It's just an estimate. Any measurement you could possibly make is going to be an estimate down to some type of really close precision. And the only difference between really those scales is the precision, just 1/10 of a precision point. But the other difference is the price. Each one of those scales is $100 more. Precision is big money. It costs a lot of money to have a much more precise type of device. So that's how I'm spending your taxpayer dollars to teach my students. So we have, no matter what, we have a problem with precision. There's no ruler or measuring device ever made or constructed by man that is infinitely precise and perfect that we can compare things to. There are many biblical measurements that I found interesting that we might want to look at. And these are biblical measurements, but that doesn't mean that they're given by God. They're measurements that came up by man, and God uses them. When God tells Noah to use so many cubits, he didn't tell him, he didn't give him the cube. The cube didn't come down from God on a platter, a nice standard cube, no matter what Bill Cosby says in his monologue. God said, build it out of this many cubits. And no one knew what a cubit was. They'd already decided they were going to do this type of measurement. If you go to Exodus 37:12, and I'll just read these. You don't have to go these. I'll tell you when there's a certain one I kind of want you to look at. Exodus 37:12 says, they also made around it a rim a hand breadth wide and put a gold molding on the rim. We have a hand breadth. And a hand breadth, if you want to, we can do some exercises today. A hand breadth, if you put your hand like this, and the distance across the four fingers there, it's about 3 inches or so. It's going to be different for all of us, isn't it? That's the problem with these measuring devices. That's a hand breadth across. Exodus 28:16, it is to be a square. This is the ephod right on the chest. A span long and a span wide and folded double. Here's a span. Everybody show me your span. There's your span right there. From this pinky to there, that's about 9 inches, depending. You can go ahead and measure yours at home if you want. It's about 9 inches is a span. So the ephod was like this on the chest. You'll be surprised, because I didn't think that was 9 inches either, but it is. Go ahead and measure. It's pretty interesting. And it's going to be different for different people. Different people have different size hands. 1 Kings 7:23, and if you want to, why don't you turn with me for this, because you wouldn't think that this would be controversial, but this is very controversial. I've actually had this come up in discussions before on the validity of the Bible and why the Bible is clearly shouldn't be taken literally or not true. And you would just find it's amazing where these kind of discussions come up. But 1 Kings 7:23, and so you want to arm yourself with this little tidbit of information. 1 Kings 7:23. He made the sea of cast metal, circular in shape, measuring 10 cubits from rim to rim. So if I, this is the big basin that they made. If I go across 10 cubits, and what do we call this on a circle? The diameter, if we want to use our math terms. Basically, you take a circle, you draw the distance across it, and we'll just call it the distance across. And it's measuring 10 cubits from rim to rim and 5 cubits high. It took a line of 30 cubits to measure around it. So the distance around, which we might call the perimeter, or for you math people, the circumference, right? The perimeter. It was 30 cubits around. Well, this is interesting because, you know, for people for a long time have been really interested in the circle, the perfect circle, and what it means. And sometime, a long time ago, there's a lot of debate on who it was that first kind of tried to start calculating it. Someone wondered, if I take this distance across here and I, like, make it a string, I take a string, like, this long, and I drape it around the perimeter, how many of these distances across would go around the perimeter? People thought there must be a perfect ratio. And it wouldn't matter what kind of circle you have. I can do a small circle and do the same thing. Take the diameter in a string and drape it around and see how many you can get around and how many do you get around a circle. According to the Bible, you get 3. That's the argument we're going to make. You know, so the Bible can't be right because it didn't take pi out to however many precision places that the computer wants it to. But we have something in science which we call significant digits. All my students hate them too, so I won't go in and explain them. Significant figures. But pi is 3 with one significant digit. It's 3.1 with two significant digits, right? 3.14 is how much as far as we go, right? Because we can only remember about 3 significant digits worth of numbers. But if you want to, you can go on YouTube and hear a song that goes just out forever. Computers can calculate how far what this ratio is from this. But if you look in 1 Kings 7:23, we have the Bible saying that pi is 3. And it's amazing where you can go and see the arguments about that. And we could go further into this and talk about that the thickness of this basin was actually a hand breadth, approximately 3 inches or so. And so are we talking about this as the diameter, the inner diameter, and are we talking about the circumference and the outside line would be the outside? And so people have went through and tried to make arguments how they can get out a really precise measurement for pi from the Bible too. I don't think we should go that way either. We should take it for what it is. It's man's measurement, a cubit. Who knows how long that cubit actually was? Because a cubit is from, if everybody wants to show your cubit here, from your elbow out here to your middle finger, that's about 18 inches, which means it should be about two spans, which is pretty quite amazing. Okay, so 18 inches from the elbow to the tip of your middle finger. Ezekiel chapter 43 through 5, it says, "He took me there and I saw a man whose appearance was like bronze. He was standing in the gateway with a linen cord and a measuring rod in his hand. The man said to me, 'Son of man, look carefully and listen closely and pay attention to everything I am going to show you, for that is why you have been brought here. Tell the people of Israel everything you see.' I saw a wall completely surrounding the temple area, the length of the measuring rod in the man's hand." So we've had measuring reeds. We've heard of these in the Bible too, right? Measuring reeds or measuring rods. This is an interesting measuring rod. It says the length of the measuring rod in the man's hand was 6 long cubits. And it defines it. Each of which was a cubit and a hand breadth. So we had a cubit, 18 inches, and a hand breadth, which is about 3 more inches. So about 21 inches were these long cubits. And he measured the wall. It was 1 measuring rod thick and 1 rod high. So the rod was 6 long cubits, so it ends up being about 10.5, 11 feet, if you want me to calculate it out for you real quick. So this was a measuring rod or a measuring reed. Those are just some biblical measurements. They're still man measurements, but they're man measurements that we read about in the Bible, all of which are not very precise. Not very precise. We have an interesting passage in Revelation 21. 15 through 17, and we just got done with the Revelation study, and I didn't totally go into this, but we talk a lot about in Revelation about how the description of heaven, or the description of the holy city, the New Jerusalem, and it's put in our terms to understand, isn't it? Is it really going to be like that? If the elements melted with fervent heat, how come he describes it with gold? Is there really going to be a street? God probably suffers too, trying to explain to us, mere humans, the beauty and wonder of heaven. And so he does it through John in man's terms. He uses all kinds of things that man understand, how we perceive beauty, and he puts it into those terms, and they're even amazing in those terms, let alone what they could be like in God's terms. And so when we're talking about the angel who's measuring this city, the heaven or the New Jerusalem, in Revelation 21, verse 15 through 17, it says, "The angel who talked with me had a measuring rod of gold." That's interesting. A measuring rod of gold. His standard was gold. Ours is platinum and iridium. "To measure the city, its gates and its walls. The city was laid out like a square as long as it was wide. He measured the city with the rod and found it to be 12,000 stadia in length and as wide and high as it is long. The angel measured the wall using human measurement, and it was 144 cubits thick." I really like that line. That's a line that my Revelation class I want to point out. The angel measured the wall using human measurement. That's the point of this whole description. Keep in mind, I'm trying to describe this in human terms. That's what Jesus is telling us here. I'm describing this with your measuring devices and the way that you can, but it's so much more wonderful than that. And what's interesting here is that the length and the width and the height of this holy city, this heaven, were all the same distance, which means it's a what? It's a cube, right? A perfect cube. And this is important here, because this goes back to the Old Testament also. In the temple, we had the Holy of Holies, right? That only the high priest could go into. And what was its dimensions? It was a perfect cube. It was the same thing, and that's the point that's trying to be made here, is that in the past, in the Old Testament, the Old Covenant, we had a Holy of Holies, which was a perfect cube, but only the high priest could go in there. You can't go in there and be face-to-face with God. But in this chapter, if you read on in Revelation 21, we have this heaven, the new Holy of Holies. It's a perfect cube also, but there's no temple in there, is what it says. There's no temple, because we will see God face-to-face. Jesus opened that door for us. He ripped the veil of the tent, and therefore we have access to it. This is a wonderful thing. So it says that the angel measured the wall using the human measurement, which means there must be another type of measurement, another standard, isn't there? There's man's standard, and there's God's standard, the standard of Jesus Christ. There has to be another standard if the angel's describing the measurement or standard as being human. There has to be another one and a more perfect standard. And the measuring rod or measuring reed, we have rod. Try something different. Rod, reed, or sometimes it's called a cane. In the Hebrew, and these words get changed and transliterated and all the way down through the Greek and the Latin. And eventually, when the Greek, it turned into this. And in the Latin, it ended up being this. From cane to what we call canon. You might have heard that word before. Canon literally means a rule, a ruler, a measuring rod, a standard. That's what it is. But in today's terms, we usually, when we're talking about the canon, we're referring to the Scriptures. The Holy Scriptures is what we refer to as the canon. And sometimes there's worries. Sorry, I think all the adhesive in the paint has been getting to me. How do we know we have it all? How do we know that we have it all in the canon, the Holy Scriptures? How do you know you're saved? The answers are the same. It's through faith. We have references. 2 Timothy 3:16 through 17 says all Scripture is what? It's God-breathed, inspired by God. It's given to us. God has said He has given it to us. Now, we know there's letters out there that were written by inspired men like Paul that aren't in there. We can go to Colossians 4:16. He says, I wrote a letter to the church at Laodicea. Pass it amongst you. We don't have it in here. Why don't we have it in here? Because God has decided that we don't need that in here. And that should be enough. Don't go into those arguments about saying, well, you know, there's these other letters. There's the Apocrypha. There's the Pseudepigrapha. I've read some of those. They're pretty interesting. Some of them are clearly just historical documents. That's fine. But God has decided what we need. And we've had these books since that time. Even in the early 100s, we have had this canon that has been established. And there really is very little doubt on that we have what we're supposed to have by God. This canon. This is our ruler, our canon, our standard by which we compare everything. Now, it's a closed canon. There's different two types of canons. There's closed canons and there's open canons. This is a closed canon, which means God has provided us with the heaven-sent ruler, the standard by which we compare everything, but it's closed. There will be no additions to this canon. No more new revelations. No changing the meter. There's nothing that needs to be changed about this, and God tells us that in multiple occasions that it's closed. A lot of you would probably reference Revelation, right? We have the under Christ's authority that this is a closed canon, Revelation 22. Don't add thing or take anything away. But just to make the point a little bit more clear, I want to show you another passage in the Old Testament. The Old Testament's closed too. It's a closed canon. It's all closed. There is no new revelation. If you go to Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 1 through 2, it says, Now Israel, hear the decrees and laws I'm about to teach you. Follow them so that you may live and may go in and take possession of the land the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. Do not add to what I command you, and do not subtract from it, but keep the commands of the Lord your God that I gave you. We have the same words that we had in Revelation in the Old Testament too. It's a closed canon. There are religions out there that have an open canon. That you can have new revelations and new things can be added to that. You can have councils that will meet and decide new things that are going to be added to the canon. We do not believe that, or I do not believe that, and that's why I worship here. Because I feel that this place believes that. That we have a closed canon. That all Scripture that is inspired by God has been given for us, and it is a perfect ruler and standard by which we can compare our lives. I have a couple more passages I'd like to go to, and then we'd like to end. Hebrews chapter 8, verses 1 through 6. Now, the main point of what we are saying is this. We do have such a high priest who sat down at the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heaven and who serves in the sanctuary, the true tabernacle, set up by the Lord, not by a mere human being. Every high priest is appointed to offer both gifts and sacrifices, and so it was necessary for this one also to have something to offer. If he were on earth, he would not be a priest, for there are already priests who offer the gifts prescribed by the law. They serve in a sanctuary that is a copy and a shadow of what is in heaven. This is why Moses was warned when he was about to build the tabernacle, "See to it that you make everything according to the pattern shown you on the mountain." But in fact, the ministry Jesus has received is as superior to theirs as the covenant of which he is a mediator is superior to the old covenant, since the new covenant is established on better promises. It's the new pattern. The scriptures that we are given, the New Testament, is the pattern by which we rule our lives. It is what we compare ourselves to. It is the pattern. I got a lot better at laying the laminate flooring when I got a whole bunch of paper and cut out things that would fit in there perfectly and then just trace them on the boards. It takes me a long time to learn things sometimes. But eventually I made a pattern and put it on there, and my life was so much easier when I followed that pattern that was set. It makes it easier in your life. Don't compare yourselves to each other. Don't say, "Well, I want to be as good as Nels is. I want to be as good as Marty is." That's flawed, because we're humans and we're completely imperfect. We're not good measuring devices. So we can't compare ourselves to one another. 2 Corinthians 10:12 says, "We do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise." It's not wise to compare ourselves with other people. I was talking to Grandpa when I think I was in junior high. We built this porch on the back side of his house. I think I mentioned this story before. And we're not professionals by any means. We got it done, and it kept the rain out and stuff, so I guess that's pretty good. But we measured the whole thing. We had two measuring devices we were using, which when I look back on it, I was thinking, that wasn't very smart of us. But we had one that was a kind of a yardstick, a wooden yardstick, and we had another one that was a measuring piece of cloth, like a cloth tape. And sometimes we used this one, and sometimes we used the other one. Just kind of whatever one was closer, we'd grab it. You know, it's convenient when you're trying to work. You got to run and get this, bring it back, right? Well, this whole thing was just, every once in a while, I was like, well, we're an inch and a half off here. And finally, one day at the conclusion of the whole structure building, we put that cloth tape up against that ruler, and guess what? It wasn't the same. When it expanded, stretched out a little bit. So we can't compare. We need to understand what our standard is and what we're going to compare our lives to. And we can't compare it to each other. We need to compare it to the scriptures and, most importantly, Christ. I want to look at the last passage, Isaiah chapter 28, verse 16 through 17. "See, I lay a stone in Zion, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone for a sure foundation. The one who relies on it will never be stricken with panic." A cornerstone. We understand what that is? It's a I used a square the other day all the time. Perfect 90 degrees. And everything can be laid off of that. Perfect foundation. That's what Christ is. He's our cornerstone, and we build ourselves up on Him. In verse 17, "I will make justice the measuring line and righteousness the plumb line." These are the standards that we use. These are the standards we use. Christ and the scriptures that He gave us, the Word of God, are the perfect standard. And I talked about how that we can be just a little bit more precise with man's measurement, but it costs a lot of money to have just one more tenth of precision. Christ is the perfect standard. He paid the price. It was a great price to become the perfect standard and the perfect example for us. Let's measure up. Let's compare ourselves to Him. If you feel you're falling short, Christ will make up the difference for you. You just need to come to Him. We ask that you do so as we stand and sing the invitation song.